Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we are joined by Dr. John Using. Dr. Using has spent decades studying the city and county economies of Southern California with a specialty on the Inland Empire. In August 2006, Dr. Using was listed by the LA Times magazine as one of the 100 most powerful people shaping life in Southern California. Dr. Using, welcome back.
It's my pleasure.
We had sort of wrapped up last time talking about the problem with the mortgages and people owing too much on their house. And just to highlight that, as an investor, we're starting to buy properties that we will keep as rentals. And it's very common for us to be buying the property at about 28% of the prior loan amount. So what that sets up literally is I'm buying a house for $90,000 and the neighbor probably owes something like $350,000.
Yeah.
At some point, that's probably got to take its toll.
It does, and that's really one of the great difficulties coming out of the whole collapse of the mortgage market system. Is if you go back and look at the history of Moreno Valley, we had the injection of large numbers of rentals into what was traditionally owner-occupied, relatively new neighborhoods. What happened in that town was three things. Number one, rentals are generally not as well cared for as the other properties in a neighborhood. And so you have difficulties caused by that. You have difficulties caused by the fact that my house isn't worth as much as it used to be because of exactly what you just said. A third thing that happens is when you have, if you check with a police department, you will find that if you have large numbers, and it's not the isolated case, but if you have large numbers of detached single-family rentals in a neighborhood, calls for police service soar.
Really?
And the other thing that happens is because you, particularly in older neighborhoods with a good deal of that activity, where rents are relatively low, you end up with large numbers of renters moving from home to home to home looking for the best deal, and classroom turnover starts to accelerate to the point where the class that's in place in June isn't the same one that started in September, which makes teaching very difficult. So as a matter of policy, one of the things that we're dealing with the various communities with right now is how do we, in fact, protect communities from having that kind of difficulty injected into them.
I never knew that. So you're saying that actually it becomes more expensive for a city as they have a greater percentage of rentals?
Without question, it does. I mean, when you look at the externalities, the side effects of the injection of large numbers of detached single-family rentals, Moreno Valley as a community was literally destroyed because HUD packaged up all of the REOs that they had across the country, sold them off to investors without even thinking about what the effect was going to be on the communities. Hmm. This time, that's one of the reasons why in the Neighborhood Stabilization Act, one of the things that was made available was monies to cities to try and protect themselves from that difficulty.
I see. So they get a chance to buy their houses themselves.
Yeah, alternately, a complicated process, but negotiating as-is prices in bulk from the people that owned the paper when there was a foreclosure, and then double escrowing the homes at those prices over to previously qualified construction firms, particularly in the case of older homes, to bring them back to where they can be sold as nice houses and then selling them as affordable housing to owner-occupants. That is the program that we're really working on in the Inland Empire, trying to get that to work so that we don't end up with the problem we had last time.
I have met with the city regarding that program, and I'm sure you have as well.
I've been one of the ones screaming about, do this, please.
I think a partnership between the contractor who needs work and the city who needs that house not to look like that probably is a great idea.
Well, it worked in the last, we did that in one of the cities, San Bernardino, in the last go-round, and I spent some time with one of the companies that did it, and they did 150 houses in that city, and checked 5 years later, and 90% of the people that bought them were still living in them. So it worked.
Well, that's a good model. The percentage of ownership, as far as home ownership, went way up, but probably because of the favorable financing.
Yes.
I think it's a given that that percentage is going to decline and create vacant houses. So I think we're going to have to accept the fact that we're going to have more rental percentage than we've had than in the, say, the past decade, wouldn't you say?
Well, actually, not necessarily. It's more a pricing question. If you get prices down to where you've got affordability back in balance with the supply of houses and the demand for houses, but at prices that people can afford. Remember, California never has built enough housing for its population. The problem was that prices went crazy on us. I have a guy that I check with every once in a while who's my expert on the housing market. He's the doorman at Checkers Hotel in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And he told me when prices get down, he's a renter, he's going to go buy a house. So I keep checking with him to find out whether Tino's gone looking yet.
And he's still...
And by the way, he has now.
Oh, he has. Okay. No, there's no doubt that the sales volume has increased. Matter of fact, it's darn near doubled over a year. But unfortunately, that year was awful, so it's hard to...
Yeah, it's doubled between the first... Actually, I do a seasonally adjusted look at this at quarter by quarter, and it was up 25% between the first and second quarter. It's up about... The percentage of sales is up about 68% between the first quarter and the third quarter. So it really had, demand has accelerated. The reason prices haven't stabilized is because the supply coming from the foreclosures continues to grow and the demand has not yet matched it.
Well, I think you really have a problem where there's a lot of people that owe way more than the home is worth, and also more than the person that wants to buy it can qualify for.
Well, that's why the only real solution to this, if you're going to stabilize these markets, is to get the principal down.
Yes.
And, you know, people say, well, they should never have bought it in the first place. Well, that's fine. You can take that sort of a harsh attitude because I didn't do it and they did.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, how much unemployment, how much decline in retail sales, how much pain for all of us are we willing to endure to punish that person?
It's sort of like the car business in a way. I mean, because there's some resentment with the bailout, but I don't know that we'd really like the ramifications of having 3 million people be unemployed.
These are the choices we get to face this time around.
Not too good. Okay, let's start looking past this. There'll be a day where this does solve itself. And Riverside appears to be one of the few places that has tremendous growth potential because it has availability of dirt. Is that true?
Well, I've been accused of by people of saying that they were going to carve the word dirt into my tombstone because of my raising that question. But in fact, that is absolutely accurate. We have in the inland region, Riverside and San Bernardino County, more dirt available for construction of dwellings than any other place in Southern California. The forecast is over the next 25 years that Southern California will add another 6 million people. Most of those will be born here. You've got to put them someplace. Orange County's completely built out. San Diego is either built out or has zoned itself out of being able to build. L.A., with the exception of out in the desert, Palmdale-Lancaster area, is built out. That pretty much means that a huge share of that housing has to be built here. And this is why this area, once we get through this, will get back on its traditional growth path and back to its traditional prosperity. The fact is, this is a temporary interruption of a normal process that was going on caused by prices going to stupid levels.
Do you think migration trends for the country might change? And here's my postulate.
Okay. Okay.
I think people would rather be here than anywhere else, and I'm talking about California in general. If you're going to retire and you had your druthers, you'd probably meander your way into California because we have a lot of goodies. But the price has prevented that. Okay, for the next couple of years, that is going to be very different. Somebody in Texas with a 150 house and a 3.5% property tax bill will look at our pricing and go, okay, I can move there and buy a pretty nice house for 150, and my tax rate is now a third, and I retire. And so let's say this fact that state income tax doesn't exist in Texas, when I retire, that's no longer a benefit to me. I guess what I'm saying is I think California might get tremendous migration from states that never dreamed that it would be possible.
I got to tell you, if that happens, the forecast I just told you is going to be higher, not lower. And yes.
But does that make sense?
Probably not your example of Texas.
Okay.
Certainly, if you think of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, I've often said is we've got to stop running the Rose Parade.
Because people look at it.
We're sitting here in November, and the temperature is expected to be in the 90s in the inland region for the next 2 or 3 days. I talked to a guy in Pennsylvania yesterday, and it was 30-something where he was.
Yeah, so that's, they look at that and go.
California has always succeeded because if it's loose, it rolls here. Whether it's from around the world or across the country, that's generally what's happened, provided people could afford to get into this market.
Yeah, now see, that's what I'm saying, is that if this is such an unusual opportunity to sneak in here, I think you're going to have, maybe it won't happen, but to me it makes sense. Just because we have retirees, the biggest group of retirees looking for that final, you know, place where they get to stay.
Yeah.
And California is finally an option.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
Stages of city growth. I moved to Riverside in probably 1973. I'd get off at Hamner Avenue and I would drive a long ways before seeing a whole lot of anything. And if I make that same trip now, I literally couldn't recognize it. There's a completely different set of commercial and residential buildings, and very little farm and oranges left. So what stage were we in the 70s, if you could kind of go back there?
Yeah, sure. When I look at the way Southern California has grown over its history since World War II, there's always been an edge that is going through a three-stage process of growing up. In the middle 70s, that edge had not reached the Inland Empire yet. By the late 70s, you were first feeling it, and that was a few entrepreneurial developers were putting houses up, mostly in places like Rancho Cucamonga, Montclair, Ontario, and Corona, just at the edge of the Inland Empire on the 10, the 60, and the 91 freeways.
Mm-hmm.
As I laughingly say in my speeches, what they do is they put up houses where people in their right mind don't want to go live, and then, lo and behold, because of price, they do.
Right.
They rush out there, and they buy these houses because they can afford them, because the land, the underlying dirt, because there's so much of it, is cheap. And they're all commuters. A little bit later, the entrepreneurial developers suddenly find the corporate developers are all around them doing the same thing because they now see that there's a market. Eventually what happens is the retail centers start to open, starting with the neighborhood shopping centers, say a Stater Brothers or something like that with associated stores. And then as the demand gets bigger, you start to see the banks come in, and then you start seeing the odd big box, and then the regional stuff move in. That stage of population growth with housing, followed by the development of population-serving functions, today, as we speak, is what you're seeing in a place like Beaumont or Victorville or
mm-hmm.
Paris.
Mm-hmm.
The edge markets. Those are where the edges were when the market shut down this time. The second stage generally moves along about a decade later. It's another group of developers also needs dirt, and those are the industrial developers, people building facilities for manufacturing or particularly of late for warehousing and distribution. And they create blue-collar jobs, and they begin to provide at least some offset to the commuting going on for the primary wage earner. The secondary wage earner in a family can afford to work in things like retail and hotel and restaurant and that sort of stuff, but the primary wage earners were still commuting. Well, that blue-collar move begins to help you there. Well, that move hit the West End in 1985. It's pretty much out of land now. It is now moving deeper inland. It is shut down now because of the U.S. recession. It will come back, and it'll be over by Marshall Reserve Base and out in San Bernardino and Redlands and places like that. The stage three we were just seeing in this last cycle, and that is when more upscale houses are being built. And what you were starting to see was a significant migration of educated younger workers looking for something other than a decaying tract home for $500,000, which is what they were able to get in Orange County. They would move over here and get really nice housing.
Mm-hmm.
They started moving over in about 2000, and between 2000 and 2007, we had in excess of a 50% increase in the number of people living in the region with bachelor's or higher degrees. That makes the region competitive for things that it wasn't competitive with before, which are your higher-end companies. That's where we were when we went into this recession, and that's where we'll be when we go out of it. Because once those people make that transition, if they stay in their homes, they're not going to go back. They're going to look for jobs locally. And oftentimes their companies will suddenly realize, wait a minute, I can locate out there in an office. It's going to be less expensive than here, and a lot of my staff has already moved. And that's sort of the way all this grows up. That final flowering of the upper end of the economy was just starting to make itself evident when we got into this mess, and it'll come back in that. So bottom line of what I'm saying is if you look at the inland economy, beyond the horizon of this interruption because of the craziness in the housing markets, once we get beyond it, you'll be back on that same three-stage growing up process that we were in before this.
Okay. So we won't revert. We have a pause, that's all.
We have a pause. I mean, cause the underlying dynamic is dirt. There's nowhere else to put a lot of these facilities except out here. And by the way, this is not unique. San Fernando went through the same process starting in the 50s. San Gabriel in the 60s. Orange County in the 70s. It's just this area became the edge growing up through that process.
Orange County went through phase three at what stage, would you say? What years?
That's what was going on there in the 70s. I talked to a developer who was actually not a developer. He was the guy who was the general manager of South Coast Plaza in Costa Mesa when it first opened. And he was out trying to recruit companies to go there, high-end retailers to go there. And the retailers were telling him, why would we put a high-end operation in Orange County? People who live there like to dress up and go to Beverly Hills to shop. We'll never succeed.
Hmm.
He then was working with a high-end outfit, a high-end shopping center out here. They were telling him exactly the same thing, looking at exactly the same numbers.
Hmm.
This is a repeat of the process. And, in fact, if you go talk to, Lucy Dunn at the Orange County Business Council about what's her principal fear, it's the fact that Orange County is losing its young, educated labor force to us.
That makes sense. What industries are most important to Riverside right now? Now is not a good addition.
Let's not talk about this minute because really everything's in a bit of trouble with the exception of the medical field is the one that's still doing all right as long as the federal government doesn't strangle it. But if you look at the sectors in Riverside, first and foremost, is the construction industry. The way you have to think about an economy is think about a gold mine in an old Clint Eastwood movie where the miners dig up the gold, ship it away, give them money. They go spend it at the general store for a shovel. They go spend it at a saloon for entertainment. As long as the gold mine is doing well, then the retail store, which is the the general store and the saloon, which is entertainment, does well. That's what an economist called a multiplier. It's the gold mines you go look for. So what are the gold mines that are bringing money into the inland region, into Riverside, into San Bernardino?
Mm-hmm.
Number one has been the residential construction industry and the non-residential construction industry. That's why we're having such difficulty right now. Number two, warehousing and distribution tied to international trade through the ports of L.A. and Long Beach. Those have been the main drivers for us, have been those. Manufacturing was a growth spot. The California law that tends to make it so difficult for firms to grow here has tended to kill that and ship it to other states. Looking down the road, you can see that state and federal government is very important because, again, it brings money from the outside world into the market.
Mm-hmm.
It's anything that brings the money in is what you're looking for.
Do you see the Fed cranking up a lot of projects, infrastructure projects, and will California?
Well, I will tell you that if you look at the bailout that we tried in May, it really didn't work. And it didn't work because people either paid down debt, saved, or they went to Walmart, which stimulated the Chinese economy.
Okay.
A stupid way to help ourselves. If you want to bring the economy back, you do it with infrastructure.
Right.
Because it gives you a double hit. It creates jobs, which is a long-term income stream helping workers, but it also creates economic capacity by giving you the infrastructure you need to have a larger economy. And that, I think, that message is probably getting through to Congress in this next go-round. Obama, I know, has talked a lot about it, and one hopes that that's the direction we go.
Okay. I would imagine that Riverside will have its share of that type of project then. I don't know what form it would come in, but...
Well, I talked to Will Kempton, who's the head of Caltrans, very briefly at a reception for the California Transportation Commission. And as a state, I said, all right, how much you got sitting on the shelf that you could roll out of there in a hurry if somebody wrote you a check? And he said in 3 months, he can have $800 million of the construction on the street, and in 6 months, $1.2 billion. A good share of that will be in an area like the inland region just because of our need for infrastructure projects and transportation.
That's good to know. I would imagine that's the route that's going to be in the next 2 or 3 years.
I think we're going to see a stimulus program of that kind. And God knows we need to renew, you know, schools and freeways and water systems. We got a ton of stuff out there that we just have not been investing in for several years now.
Median incomes from Orange County to Inland Empire, what percentage difference is there?
It is a significant difference if you look simply at the median income and no other way of looking at it but that. If you take median income and you subtract the cost of housing, which is the major differentiation in cost of living between the inland region and the coastal region,
mm-hmm.
they're just about dead even.
Okay.
Which is not something that most people realize. They think that there's a big difference in that difference. But when you allow for housing costs, they're actually almost the same. It's quite interesting.
So as Riverside matures into this phase three, once we get started again, then we'll be attracting more of those educated high earners and eventually those companies to come to Riverside. That is
precisely how Orange County grew up. I mean, Orange County used to be a place where people commuted to L.A.
That's right.
Well, now that's exactly what will happen here. It's, you know, this is not rocket science. It's history.
Well, that's most of the time people that understand the history are most able to make the most accurate projections going forward. Dr. Using, I've really enjoyed these two interviews. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Bruce, it's been fun talking with you.
All right, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.